whatever we might use to put into place Peter and Andrew and James and John. On an occasion in which, being individuals that are spiritually minded, being individuals that had grown up hearing the law and studying the law as far as on the Sabbath, and as a young child up and being given there the words that God had penned through his prophet Moses and through the prophets and the historians for the children of Israel, and reading and learning all of these. But nonetheless, at a point in which we make a determination, and maybe a determination was somewhat made for us, as to the course of life that we would pursue, to think about, well, you know, I've been raised in this family that are fishermen. We live here by the sea, and that's what we do. That's what my father does, and I have spiritual interest, and I wonder about things that have been promised and that the rabbis talk about in synagogue, about the coming of the Messiah and Christ, and have that kind of interest. So much so that apparently there was time that they had set aside and that they dedicated to learning more about that as they were disciples of John the Baptizer. But nonetheless, they had a living to make and they had work to do, and that living and that work that they did was fishermen. So after they spend some time and hearing from John the Baptizer and considering and maybe talking among themselves about these expectations and the times in which they live and whether or not the Christ could come, and having already been pointed out that by John, someone that they were looking to not only as a rabbi and as a teacher, but probably some conversations regarding statements that he has made about being the subject of prophecy himself, being the voice, that voice that is in the wilderness. But they have heard his statement as he saw Jesus of Nazareth saying, "Behold, the Lamb of God who comes to take away the sins of the world." All those things are interest. These are spiritually minded men, but like I said, nonetheless, they are fishermen. That's what they've been trained to do. They know their job well. They are grown men, and they someday, at least we know with John and his brother, that they still worked under their father. Their father was still working, but someday they'd be taking over the family business, and they'd be the ones, you know, making all the decisions and be in charge of all of that. And here they are on this day, having done their fishing that night. It's into the next day. They probably haven't even had an opportunity yet to go home and sleep because they fish at night and they're going to have to sleep sometime during the day. But here they are at this portion of the day. They've got work yet to do, and so they're mending their nets. They are taking care of business. And this Jesus comes along, walking along the shoreline. That Jesus that they have already been introduced, as we said, to by John the Baptizer. And he says, "Why don't you guys come follow me? And I'll make you into something else. I know you have all this background. I know you have all this training. And I know this is what you do, and I know this is your livelihood and all of this. And you weren't called at the age of 12 to study with the rabbis and become, you know, an authority on the law and maybe go into the practice of being a lawyer or scribe or possibly being groomed to be a ruler in the synagogue or in your community or any of those things. But nonetheless, I'm asking you to leave all of that behind because I have something in mind for you that you'll continue to be fishers, but you'll be fishers of men from this point. And I can make you into that." And to hear those words and wonder about that statement. You're going to make us into what? We have all this time, we have all this training, we put in all this energy to be fishermen, and yet you want to make us now disciples as grown men to be under your tutelage, to learn a new occupation, to learn something new in life. We find that even as they stood before the Sanhedrin, as recorded in the fourth chapter of the book of Acts, that it was noted that among those ragtag disciples that Jesus had, that we kind of, humored him by referring to him as rabbi, as teacher, as master, when we would question him. But of course, we all giggled and laughed at that, behind his back when we went back to our little places of abode and into our goves and with our true scholars and our disciples. But nonetheless, these men followed him around. We recognize that, but they're just Galileans. And so, making note of that, it says, when they beheld the boldness of Peter and John and had perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled. And they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. And so with all what they may have thought about Jesus and his, position as a rabbi and a master of the law, and, even themselves, we know that they question among themselves, how can he know the things he knows? And he didn't, grow up in our schools. He's just that carpenter, he trained as a carpenter. And yet they make note that Jesus has taken these men and he's changed them. He's molded them. Unlearned and ignorant men of Galilee, fishermen. And now here they are, able to hold their own toe-to-toe, nose-to-nose, face-to-face in respect to the law and what is lawful and their rights as to what they might do. What gave you the right? Who told you you could do this? How do you take upon yourself such authority to do these things? And yet, here they go, wow, these men have been with Jesus. So 3 years after this event that we just read, or was read for us there in Mark chapter 1, about Jesus calling these four men, and as well as the others that would become, but here are these four, and we have this statement of Jesus, come and I will make you. I will change things about you. I will equip you. I will enable you. I will empower you to be and to do and to accomplish different things. There's nothing wrong with the occupation which they led. They were skilled in it. They could make a living in it, and they could be respected in it. They could develop that business well enough that it says that as of John's, at least in their father, they had hired servants. They had men that were in their employee. We get some indication of the boats, that they had more than one boat even. And so they had a pretty lively business going here. And they know and they understand fishing. There's an occasion in which Peter, has fished all night long, and Jesus is telling him to throw his net over and he'd catch, a really large number of fish. And Peter's kind of like, Lord, this is not even the right time of day, And besides that, we fished this hole all night long and we didn't get anything. I know my job. I know my business. I know what I'm doing here, Jesus. And you're asking me to go against all of that. And so, the rest of that story. And a lot of drug in and stuff. And there's a whole good lesson in that. But that's not our lesson this morning. But the point is, see, they knew something. They were equipped. As they had all this training and all these other things. And yet in 3 years, Jesus made them, empowered them, gave them the tools, the ability to be something different. And so Jesus said, I will make you. And so our idea this morning and the title of our lesson is, what will Jesus make of you? What will he make of us? Is there anything? Is this something that can be accomplished in us? Or was it, for only those that could walk with Jesus and that he could have, his time with face to face and he could teach them? Well, what we do know is this, that after this 3 years, here are the rulers, and they are impressed with the men. They go, wow, they have been with Jesus. We see men that are strong in faith. We see men that are servants of God. We see men that are fishers of men. that because of their work and their efforts and their fishing in the gospel of Jesus Christ, that there are even souls to this day that are coming to the Lord. Even ourselves are a bit of their fruit, of their work, of what they accomplished. So let's think of that in respect to ourselves. And we ask that, well, what can He make of us? What can He make of you? Just remember, with the background that we gave, that we're talking about men that, yes, had this training, and that, yes, they did literally fish for fish and such as that, and that Jesus said that I will make you, but He also chose men that were spiritually interested. They were taking time apart from their work to sit and to learn from this man that they considered a prophet, John. And then when they are introduced to Jesus, they follow Him home and they want to talk to Him. They want to learn more from Him. And as they find one another, as they find others that they know, they talk in terms of like, come, we have found the Messiah. And, you know, the question is, well, where did you find that? How did you find it? You know what? But nonetheless, there had to be conversations. They had to have talked about these things. I mean, this wasn't surely just out of right field. What do you mean you're coming to me talking to me about the Messiah? You know, who is the Messiah? What are you talking about? No, they were men interested in things like this. They might not fully comprehend, most certainly understand at this point, nor could they foresee the depth, nor could they even understand or know ahead of time, you know, that they would be apostles. The apostles that we look at and that we admire. And so we look at ourselves and go, well, what can we be? Well, do you have any interest in spiritual matters? I would guess that you do because you're here. We are seeking to be about spiritual things even as assembling here this morning. So I'd like to remind you of a couple of things, and that is Jesus' power to make. Over in the first chapter of John in the third verse, we find that one of those who was one of those fishermen is now giving to us one of the greatest pieces of literature that could ever be placed into the hands of men. And in that writing, in this book, in that literature, we read, he says, all things were made through Him. And without Him was not anything made that hath been made. All things were made through Him. And there's nothing that exists. There's nothing that you can look at, that you can see, that you can behold, or that you can discover, or that we didn't even know that it existed until we could magnify it to the degree that we magnify it now, that, you know, we go, wow, you know, that thing was so tiny that you couldn't even begin to know that it was even there without all this great magnification that we have, you know, through these microscopes. And yet even that little bitty thing that exists there says it exists because He made it. We are familiar, we know the Genesis story, how that He took dust, dirt from the earth, and He fashioned and formed it. And He breathed into it the breath of life. And that dirt that had at least once been dirt, that's now been fashioned and formed into this man, into flesh, and now is given life through His life, through the breath of life, that He created that. He made us. He made that. And so as we look out among one another, and even as we look in the mirror and see our own reflection, we can be reminded, well, He made us. He made those things that we cannot even see without all this great magnification. Shall we doubt that He is able to make whatever He pleases as He is our maker, as Elihu says in Job chapter 35 and verse 10. Our maker. And so we talk about that. Even the world sometimes goes, well, you know, I'll help you make meet your maker, you know, type of thing. Maybe not even fully understand it or comprehend it or even think, you know, any further than that. But nonetheless, it's out there for the minds of all people, you see, that He is our maker and that He made everything and He made us. Not only that, biblical history shows us some of the things that He made, not just by right of creation, and that is not just, you know, fashioning and forming it like He did dirt and making it a man. But He's talking to a man that, I don't know, we don't know really very much about his background at all. And so I don't know, you know, how big a stretch this is as far as calling Abraham and Abraham going, okay, I'll do that. I want you to leave here where you live and go off over here in a land that you may not even be aware of that even exists, but nonetheless, that I'd like to take you and go over there and do that. And Abraham says, you know, I'll do it. Okay. I don't know how many asked before that, if he asked any before that or anything else, but we know Abraham did that. And so we don't know what God made of Abraham as far as being that disciple, but we do know this, when God said that Abraham didn't have any children, and God told him, He says, now I'm going to take you over there and we're going to dwell in this land and I'm going to give that land to you. And Abraham could be, well, yeah, okay, that's cool and that's neat and all that, but so what? You know, I'm 75 years old. How much longer, you know, do I got to make a name for myself type of thing? And I don't even have any children, and who am I going to leave all that land to type of thing? And God's kind of like, don't worry. He says, I will make thee a great nation. And Abraham doesn't have children. It's not going to happen now for another 25 years, even. And yet we know that whatever Abraham was as far as a disciple of God's and follow him or whatever, that we don't know. But this we do know, he couldn't have children and hadn't had them. And then at 100 years old, God gives him the promised son. And through him, we all know about the Jews today, right? Well, they all exist because of that statement right there. Well, that statement up there for you, right here on my screen. I will make you a great nation. God did that for Abraham. There was a young boy that was a shepherd. Well, he was a pretty good shepherd. He was a loyal shepherd. He'd lay down his life for his sheep, but he was still just a shepherd. And he wasn't even a big boy. He had brothers that were bigger than him. The king that was the king of his people stood a shoulder above everybody else. And nonetheless, we find that God took this young shepherd boy and he said, I will make you a great name. Kings will be called after you. God said, a shepherd boy. He was able to do that with. I know Solomon had a better advantage than David. I mean, he is born of the son of a king and he's born in the house of royalty. But nonetheless, he's still just a young man when God told him, I'll make your name better than your father's. I'll make your name greater than your father David. It just seemed where I'll make you, David, a great name. And all these kings after are called after the name of David. All of them are from his household, from his lineage. And yet of his son, God says, I'll make you even greater. Well, time does not suffice for us to go through and look at all of the people that biblical history shows us that God made into things other than what they were at that time when he called them and when he promised them, I'll do something with you. The point is that when God called someone and said, I'm going to do something with you, well, he did it, didn't he? And they became what God said that they would do or what they would be. But the lesson for us is to hear so far is to give us confidence, because who are we? Are we shepherds? Are we fishermen? Well, maybe we have a title. And we're bigger and better than shepherds and fishermen, even though those are titles. But, you know, maybe we are more prominent, more well known. Maybe we are better educated or whatever than they. But still, yet, do you suppose God has in mind anything for you. And what he would be able to do with you. If you like these fishermen, or you like Abraham, or you like this little shepherd, would answer his call. And accept that he desires and he can, based upon history, based upon the fact that he is creator and he created all things, he can make you something different than what you may be even this day. Over in Romans chapter 9, we have this idea of the potter and clay, and we realize that imagery gives us this insight of, just like the picture, though I've had to dim it down in order to get my text to be seen as clearly as I want, but nonetheless, you know, the idea of clay that's being fashioned and formed, made into something. It started out as just a lump, but yet the potter begins to fashion and form it into something else. And so we have that imagery over in the 9th chapter of the book of Romans. In the 19th verse, I wish, and Lord willing, as you'll see tonight, we actually were going to begin a study on the book of Romans. And so we will eventually get here in that study. I wish that, you know, I could talk some more about some of the things we are going to read here, but we're just going to read some things for one point for us this morning. He says, "Thou wilt say unto me, why does he still find fault? For who withstands his will?" And so he's bringing this idea of a potter and clay in to make another argument than what we're making. But nonetheless, it's still a truth. The truth he uses to prove a point different from what we're seeking to prove. But it's still that true point. We're just using it to prove something a little differently. So he says, "Nay, but, O man, who are thou that replies against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why did you make me thus? Or hath not the potter a right over the clay, from the same lump to make one part a vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering vessels of wrath fitted unto destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory upon vessels of mercy, which he afore prepared unto glory, even us whom he also called, not from the Jews only, but also from the Gentiles." And so we take the truths that he uses there, and that is that he says that God is our maker, and just like a potter who has a lump of clay, he can do whatever he wants with that lump of clay, and he can make it into whatever he chooses it to be. And the apostle goes on here, and he says, and not just from the Jews only, but also from all the nations. That is, it includes you and me, it includes every person. God is able to make and do something with more than what you and I could even imagine, if we believe it, if we trust him, if we know that he is the one who fashions and forms it. He says from the same lump he can make. And I know there's some questions there and a little bit of confusion. Well, but he made me this way, some people say, you know. And see, it says right there, so he made me to be, you know, this spittoon, when he made you this beautiful flower vase, you know, and type of thing. And all from the same lump of clay. But I want you to notice over in 2 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, verses 20 and 21, that his point isn't that God just indiscriminately makes what he wants to make, but that we get to choose the vessel that God will make out of us. And so we get to choose what we are made into. In 2 Timothy 2, beginning at verse 20, he says, "Now, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but of wood and of earth." Now see, that's where I come up with the spittoon and the flower vase. And I know a spittoon's not a pretty picture, but that's the point. some things, you know, are not the prettiest, but they serve a purpose, right? You know, but which would you rather be? You know, even us old, rugged, hard-skinned, callous guys wouldn't want to be a spittoon. Okay, maybe not a flower vase, or, you know, necessarily, but hey, you know, maybe a halfway decent-looking water pitcher at least, right? You know, and we want to be something better than, you know, just a spittoon. So he says, if a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet or equipped or prepared or made in a sense. When he says, meet for the master's use, prepared unto every good work. So we get to choose what we can be made into. So like the disciples there, that's Matthew 4, actually, in verse 20. I'm not sure how I got 19 and 20, however. 19 being an interesting passage there because that was the young rich man, you know, that he chose not to follow Jesus. So, hey, maybe that was a good Freudian slip. But nonetheless, it's not necessarily the passage that I intended when I said there. They left their nets, and that is verse 20, just of a different chapter, the fourth chapter. And they left their nets and followed him. You see, that's what we have to do. We have to choose. We have to determine. We have to believe that the Lord is our maker and that He can make us vessels fit for God's use. And we have to leave behind what we would make of ourselves or what the world would make of us or whatever else. And trust Him to create, fashion, and form us into something that He can use. And so what is it that you could be that the Lord could use? Well, He took these fishermen, Peter, who brought hexes by curses upon himself and swore with great oaths that he did not know Jesus, and He made him that great spokesman who gave his life eventually for Jesus. He made John, one of the other fishermen, a man who was quick to anger, a man who was judgmental, a man that you really wouldn't want to get in his way if you disagreed with him. He took a man that was one of the sons of thunder and became the great apostle of love. Made some totally different people out of these men, didn't he? And certainly made them all fishers of men. He took Paul, a persecuting Pharisee, and made him a witness and one who would discover what it felt like to be persecuted for the faith of Jesus Christ. And he would do it all the way to the end, so to the point that he would say, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the course. It is done. And there is a crown that is laid up for me. He goes on and he says, but not only for me, but also for all those who have loved his appearing in righteousness. But nonetheless, took that persecuting Pharisee and made him into that man. We can look at all these different people that he has changed and that he made into other people. But it's easy for us to go, yeah, but that was them. And, you know, they may have been something great. They may have really been something, you know, even though David was a shepherd, there's a point chance that he may have really been something great anyway later on. But he wouldn't have been the Lord's great king, you see. It took the Lord to make him that. Now, as we come to the conclusion of our lesson, I want to leave these thoughts with you. And that is these are words describing our change when we become Christians. And that is anyone and everyone who becomes a Christian. These are words that describe you. If you had become a Christian or if you are a Christian, this describes you not David, not Abraham, not Moses, not these great men, you know, not Peter, not John, not Paul, but you and me. When he says in Romans, the 12th chapter, in the second verse, that we are people who are transformed. And so he's saying that of all Christians. If in Jesus Christ you would allow Him to be your potter and you would be His lump of clay, He will transform you. He'll transform us into something different than what we were. In Titus chapter 3 and verse 5, he talks about the power of the gospel as it was presented through the Holy Spirit as a means of regenerating man. And so he says we've gone through a regeneration. If you're not exactly sure, he just puts it in another word here when he says, and a renewing. So he transforms all of his people. Everyone that's his undergoes a process of transformation, or a process of change, of regeneration, being made something other. Something new, he says, a renewing. It is described in Romans, the 6th chapter, in the 4th verse, as all those who have been baptized into Christ have been raised in newness of life. Everyone. Everyone that is immersed into Jesus Christ gets raised unto new life. See, these are all phrases, words, ideas that describe the change. What God and Jesus promises to make in us. He says He can do that. In fact, what He can make of us, Peter says over in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4, and speaking as one of experience, he says He makes you partakers of the divine nature. He makes you partakers of the divine nature. Jesus took on flesh and became man and became as us that we might become as Him. That we might partake in that which is what He is and was before He ever became flesh and what He returned to when He gave up flesh. That we might partake in that same divine nature with Him. Jesus is still making. He still needs fishers of men. He still needs kings. He still needs shepherds. He still needs, well, everything that He needs to accomplish His work on earth. He still needs it, and He's still making it of us, of you, if you will allow Him, if I will allow Him, if we will allow Him. He will make of you. So what would you have the Lord make of you? What would you want Him to make of us to be? Would you, as the song says, not the one that we're going to sing, but one that comes to mind, take my life and let it be consecrated, O Lord, to Thee. Take and make us after Your will, after what You have purposed and what You have designed. You see, the fault isn't in the Lord. We've seen He's capable of doing it. The fault isn't in that you can't do it, because the Lord has promised you can. And His invitation. Make us